old-fashioned homemade brew.
Gotta have some homemade brew.
I got me some butter beans.
Good morning. You're listening to WGXC. This is At Issue. And I'm your host, Tom DiPietro, and I have a special guest here today. We have the chief of police in Hudson, New York. But we're having a little technical difficulty. 1 second. How about now? No? Okay. Let's see what we can do here. How about now? Nope, nothing, huh? Okay, 1 second. How about now? Let's play some promotions here.
Kiss Brain Radio every Thursday from 3:30 to 4 on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Okay, I think we took care of that technical little blip. As I was saying, this is Tom DiPietro, and you're listening to At Issue. I'm at sort of a permanent replacement for Victor Mendolia, who's making his run for the mayor of Hudson. So maybe, Chief, he'll be your next boss.
Perhaps.
As I said, I'm here with Chief Edward Moore, who's been in office now for 2 months?
About 4 months.
Four months.
Yeah.
And how's it going so far?
It's going great. Met a lot of great people in this city. So far, so good. I'm very happy.
One of your stated desires at the beginning of your time here has been to get more policemen on the street, walking the streets. And mostly I've noticed you walking the streets.
Right.
Is that part? I mean, has it been working out? I mean, do you really?
Yeah, I think one of the things, the reason you see me out there is because I enjoy that, but also to lead by example. I think if the patrolmen see me out there walking, they'll understand that's something that I want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to get away from the car culture, the patrol car culture, to get out and interact. But today, for example, we have one car on the streets and two on foot, one on foot and one on a bicycle. So slowly but surely, you know, we'll change the culture and try to get this more face-to-face type of policing.
Are the policemen walking other blocks than just Warren Street?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah. We're in all the wards. And it's just a matter of getting our patrols, you know, when we're strong enough, when we have enough patrol strength to do it, we'll do it. The car is something that, while I dislike it, I've said it many mm-hmm. times, it's one of the worst things that happened for policing. I also have to have cars. I
sure.
have to have everything associated with them. But
just because if there's an emergency one spot,
oh, absolutely.
You got to run to it.
The cars are so different now. They're loaded with technology. There's a
oh,
lot
right.
of things at the patrolman's fingertips that weren't there years ago. So a car is a necessary evil.
Right.
It's a great thing, but I still want to emphasize the foot and bicycle patrols.
So we have five cars, am I right?
We have five. Marked cars. In the city.
Oh, right, and there's mm-hmm. the unmarked ones.
Yeah.
The reason I ask is because, as many listeners know, there's been a request for two new ones.
Yeah. Yeah, that came, and someone pointed out that isn't it ironic that you don't like cars and the first thing you do is ask for two new ones. Yeah. That was a part of the fiscal responsibility part of my job. I noticed, monthly checking my different bills and stuff, that we had an inordinate amount of money being spent on vehicle maintenance. And when I reviewed it, I see that our cars were getting high in mileage. As they get high in mileage, they require more and more big-time repairs. They're not under warranty anymore. So it was the prudent thing to do to try to rotate our stock and incorporate this into, you know, future budgets to replace the cars, you know, not exceedingly, not because we want or like new cars, but try to keep the stock fresh so they're not problematic and costing us too much money.
There's only one car out there at any given time, or is there?
Oh no, sometimes there's more. Then there's a supervisor, and then the detectives have a car assigned to
mm-hmm.
them. So it varies depending on activity. But we are going to. My plan would be to overall reduce the number of cars.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to go from 10 to 9, and I will do that. In the first instance, so we'll reduce by one, and then we'll reevaluate. You know. Commensurate with manpower and car costs and things like that.
Well, that raises another question that we talked about a little earlier. How many full-time police officers are there?
Well, we're authorized to be 26. Right now we're operating with 24,
mm-hmm.
and we've canvassed the civil service list to see who's available from the most recent test
mm-hmm.
with the anticipation of hiring and replacing the two officers. I guess it's I'm learning that Hudson Police is constantly plumbed by the state police and other agencies. So we lose, you know, good officers to other agencies and have to be always wary of mm-hmm. replacing them.
Is a big part of your budget retired policemen? Are there pensions and
no, health? No. My majority of my budget is salaries.
That comes out of, where does retirement, is the retirement fund a separate entity city?
Separated from my normal budget.
And how many retirees, you know?
I don't know.
A lot, right?
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully more and more. Right?
What's the, is it like New York City, 20 years?
Yeah, it's the same thing.
The, talking about the cars again, there's been, well, most people know that there's the city council was authorized to go ahead and investigate purchasing the former Finish Line for the new police headquarters. And you were on board with that decision, I believe, right?
Yes.
There's been, I don't know if it's worth even considering, but some people have said, well, that's kind of an odd place to put the new police headquarters. I have a two-part question. First of all, is there any evidence that it really makes a difference where in a town, in a city this small, where the actual headquarters is? I mean, is it really preventative to put it in a neighborhood that perhaps has more crime?
That's a controversial question because
is there research about it? I mean, I would think
it's hard to search the database of arrests over the years to try to localize where the activity is, where the majority is, but I think when you get into it, my opinion is you step back and you realize that the city is a mile long and a half mile wide.
Right.
So we're not talking a large precinct in Los Angeles County. This is a thing where response time really is not going to be affected on which end. So I didn't put that in my top priorities. Mm-hmm. You know, basically the building became available, you know. In reality, what you want, what the city would want, is a beautiful police station with marble pillars and beautiful parking area and everything. But you also have to be a realist. What can we do within budget? What becomes available? And what appealed to me was the amount of parking that you have over there at the Finish Line and for the public that's coming in to come to the court or come to the police station or parking bureau. Right now Warren Street, there's very little parking. I get annoyed when we park in front of store owners, you know, because they're trying to make a living,
right.
And there's a police car parked in front of their place for just no parking at the 400 block for the extra police cars.
Right.
So that appealed to me, the parking. Logistically, if there was a large event in the city of Hudson, a large casualty event, that you could bring a lot of assets in on Route 9 and down Union Street and mass a lot of police assets in that area as opposed to being buried downtown. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things about the location that were appealing to me.
The one concern, I'm not sure it's a legitimate concern, but the one concern was about the train going through, which happens, you know, a couple times a day, and it would cut off the police station from the western part of town. Do you think that's a legitimate concern? Or?
I think people that bring that up, because they bring it up and because they're concerned, that makes it a legitimate concern. Yeah. Did I look at the trains as a complete reason to just completely disregard the proposal at Finish Line? No. So you start thinking about it. What can I do to counteract these concerns? So, and of course, right when we're talking about trains, there's a massive train derailment in Spain.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, so there's a couple
there's
things.
A bunch of them all over. Yeah,
yeah, right.
In Metro North had a derailment.
And the one in Maine.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Part of the overall plan is I'd love to get an office of convenience down in the first or second ward, which would localize our patrolmen to encourage
idea.
Them to use the off, not a full-blown station,
right,
but a place to go in, do paperwork, and be seen. So that would put bodies down there at any given moment. The trains notify us before they come through the city. So we have warning. And then the third part of it is...
And by the way, do you know if they notify the hospital too?
I think it goes out over the county emergency broadcast. I don't know about the hospital.
There was a great picture someone posted on Facebook of a ambulance waiting for the train to go through.
Well, and I answered that by saying, well, let's suppose that I had a heart attack in my office at 400 block.
Mm-hmm.
That car, that ambulance could be waiting equally to
right.
bring me
sure.
to the hospital.
Sure. Well, that's one of the obvious responses that... either side gets cut off, no
right.
matter which side you're on.
But I don't discount these people's concerns because there's talk about trains being longer and larger and
right.
blocking up for a more
exactly,
period of time.
Yes.
You know, there's a general rule of 10 minutes, you know, that you can actually train is in violation of the law if it blocks a public road for more than 10 minutes. But I think there's a couple things we could do. We could work with the train, with Conrail. We could work with them to try to get these notifications. I would like to get my guys, I've already reached out for training, what to do in case of a derailment. There's a lot of things we can do to be more aware of the train situation. But it's a train town.
Right.
I look at Kingston, for example, and the train travels miles through the center of town and along the shopping areas in Ulster. And, and there's a lot of towns that have this thing. So while it's not ideal, did I think that the train situation at 701 Union, at the finish line, was a super concern? I might be wrong, but my opinion is no, it's not.
Jeez, I lost my thought there. Sorry. I was just thinking, you know, maybe the Chamber of Commerce building would be a good place for that satellite office.
Yeah, some people have proposed things to me down there. It's just a matter of getting it done.
Yeah.
The other thing is I've talked to I've started conversations with housing and urban development.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they used to have a program where police officers could be hired to work more or less in uniform, localized in areas that have concerns. Providence Hall, Schuyler Court, down there where people gather, let's say on a Friday night or Saturday
mm-hmm.
night, affects the quality of life of the residents of Providence Hall. And so, and years ago, they used to have a program where the HUD would actually pay to have police officers on foot in that area to kind of disperse large gatherings. So I'm investigating that.
That brings up a question I've been meaning to ask, and I think a lot of people are concerned with. What neighborhood? I mean, this is kind of controversial in the sense that everybody has theories about which neighborhoods need the most attention and need the sort of police presence to prevent or deal with crime. Before you answer that, I'm wondering, do we have anything in the nature of CompStat, that is to say, a record of where various types of crimes take place?
We use a database that's a police server that you can actually, I think we could probably devise a program to just go in there and pull out, you know, location of crime to try to create a database.
Mm-hmm.
We do not have anything that's localized that I can just easily pull up and say, look, we had, you know, 14 felonies in the third ward and four. We don't have
How dare
right
you? That's my ward.
Well, yeah.
We do not commit felonies. Not
right. So we don't have that. But the conventional wisdom is we know what's going on when. It's seasonal. We have a lot of activities in the summer. It varies, but because it's such a small town, we can put a lot of police assets to address any problem as it comes up.
So that's more. So you're saying it's small enough that it can be anecdotal, that the way you figure these things
out. Yeah, the guys, that's one of the things I'm impressed by the Hudson Police Department is, and I'd like to improve on it, but any officer in the area, whether it be state trooper or deputy, knows that they can come to the Hudson Police, and they'll have a good knowledge of who's who within the community, especially the bad guys. I mean, they know,
mm-hmm.
they know from experience. The guys are working, they're hustling, and they know from a massive experience. And that was the way it was back when I was a trooper locally.
Mm-hmm.
You could go to the Hudson Police Department, and they would know right away who's who and what probably happened. You know, majority of the crime in the county has a Hudson connection.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, we are the county seat.
We are the county seat. And the local guys, the local men and women of the police force, they know. They know
mm-hmm.
who's who, and they know what the problems are and how to address them.
So do you? I've seen it said that some of the, especially the drug-based crime, is generated by people not from Hudson who come in and, you know, consider this a place worth exploiting, you know.
Well, it's, you know,
to sell.
Listen, these are the two things that really get me, and that's the people that would destroy young lives, and that's your drug dealers
mm-hmm.
and your gang-affiliated people. These are the people that are out there taking impressionable youths and giving them bad options. And while I'm here, that's going to be a focus of what we do. We would love to eliminate these drug dealers every time, let them know that there's working in conjunction with other agencies, the deputies, and working with the state troopers and with the DA's office to really put a hard hit and let these people understand that there's a penalty to be paid. You just can't come on the train up from wherever, go into Hudson, set up business, and work with impunity. We want to get these guys.
So it does happen.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, drug dealing is a really pet peeve and will be a focus of while I'm here to concentrate efforts to remove the drug dealer and the gang affiliated people.
So that's for real too. I mean, you're saying they're gangs who come in from outside, or they're actually recruit?
No, I think. Look, the gang culture is everywhere,
mm-hmm.
Okay? Are there national gangs roaming the streets of Hudson? No. But there's people that would take an impressionable youth and offer the gang kind of lifestyle and ideas and philosophy. They'll offer that to a kid that's sitting on the fence that maybe mm-hmm. doesn't have an opportunity to work or have some other interests, you know? And those are the people that's what they'll do. They'll bring them into this kind of thing, and that's what we've got to nip in the bud around here.
Is there a police presence in the schools?
Well, there was. We had an SRO program. The funding went away. I met with the superintendent of schools, and what we do is we incorporate the schools themselves into our patrol, and have the officers walk through the schools, be present, but. It's not there like it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand in Washington they're working on the Safe Schools Project, and that eventually we might see money return, especially in the wake of all the school violence throughout the country in Connecticut. And you might see a time very soon where that money is restored. And then if it were, I could say I would definitely have mm-hmm. a full-time presence over in the school. And, you know, the whole thing about that is we want to just be there as an example of a mm-hmm. positive role model.
Right.
There's
not a lot of incidents there.
No, well, there's incidents. It's maintenance style
sure.
stuff, but our focus won't be to go over there and arrest kids or use them as a conduit of information to
right.
rat on. No, the whole purpose there is to be a good example.
You could have Jake Hoffman go undercover. He looks about 12.
Yeah, right. He always got to look younger. But, you know, you want the police to be there as a positive role model to say, hey, here's an example of someone who's, doing it the right way, that I'd want to be like that guy,
right.
get involved in that, and be a good contact, and just be a good role model. And the interaction, the police aren't someone here that are going to write you a ticket or arrest your family members mm-hmm. or be brutal. No, there's a human side to it, and... You can do a lot of good in the schools.
That's right. We leave the parking tickets to the parking enforcement.
Well, that's the other thing. You know, the parking bureau is not affiliated with the police department.
Oh, it's not? Okay.
No, and it kind of gets me because people, they go to the police station to pay their parking
right.
ticket.
So we all assume it's...
They assume it's part of it. I get a lot of calls and a lot of letters. And the only thing that we do is we oversee the conduct and appearance of the parking enforcement officers.
Okay.
So that's something I think we need to, in the city of Hudson, to redefine and get out there. And I'm working on that, too, with the city council.
So the ticket writing by police officers is mostly moving violations, not parking.
Yeah, we can. I mean, they're authorized to write parking mm-hmm. violations and... But the things you see every day, the little red and white tickets, are a function of the parking bureau.
Now I'm curious about how you mentioned that in the car you have much more access to computers and information. Are there available sort of handheld devices that do the equivalent kind of work?
Yeah, technology is changing. It's changed so much in the last 30 years. I mean, the old cars used to have a five-channel radio bolted to the hump,
mm-hmm.
and that was it. Now... There's everything. There's these plate reader LPR cars.
Mm-hmm.
As they drive down the street, they're automatically reading the license plate and checking against DMV and against wanted. It scans automatically. We use laptops in the vehicles now, and then there's talk about tablets that are portable. So
well, that's what I was wondering. Is there anything that they could actually do on
walking? Yeah, I looked into the tablets, and the state police said there was somewhere in the neighborhood of a $6,000 unit, which is way over our budget that
right.
we could afford. But you see, like everything, the technology is evolving. And who knows, 4 years from now, it might be something completely different.
Now, you said there are 24 police officers right now, two potential hires. When you came in, did you feel that was the right kind of number? Do you have a mandate to change that in any way?
Yeah, there's an authorized strength of 26, so we've applied to fill those two positions. Mm-hmm. When I came in, I wanted to remain objective and say, hey, you know, is this number appropriate? Because it is a small city. It's 6,500. There's a very high police-to-population ratio. And then I sat back and looked at the activity and what are they doing and are they needed? And I would say, I assure you, that number is appropriate because I come from a trooper culture where, three or four calls on an eight-hour tour is a pretty busy day. You're mm-hmm. driving all over and you're doing these different things. But it's not unusual for a Hudson police officer to do 20 calls in a day. Mm-hmm. And that's a heavy caseload. That's a heavy load. And they're dealing with everything from, minor maintenance type of problems, domestic things, all the way up to felonies. So they're very, very good, but very busy. So there's no sitting around drinking coffee in the station. These guys are busy.
Which reminds me, someone asked me to ask you, where can you get the best donuts in town?
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I have not seen much donut eating. In fact, as you know, most of the police officers I know, I see at CrossFit.
Well, we had talked about that. That's the other thing. I'm very impressed at the physical fitness of the officers, person for person. We have a group that is involved with CrossFit. They have their own CrossFit team. And that's one of the things. Traditionally, the police athletic league is associated with basketball leagues and this kind of things. Well, there's a new generation out there. Mm-hmm. So we're looking into and exploring getting our officers certified to be instructors in CrossFit and then invite local youths in to have a CrossFit team and compete and stuff like this. And I think it's a way of connecting to the youth.
Yeah, that's a great idea. We're talking here on WGXC 90.7 or WGXC.org. with Police Chief Edward Moore, our chief of 4 months. He replaced Ellis Richardson. And so far, I don't think there's been any major crimes in town on your watch.
Well, the first month I was here, we had two shootings in alleys.
Right. And there's been arrests on both?
Yes, we've closed. I'm real happy with their closure performance. We've closed those two things with arrests. We had a... some assaults going on, robberies where delivery men were beaten up and robbed.
And then there was the one bodega robbery.
Right, bodega robbery, and they're connected, and we've developed a good case on that, working towards arrests. Mm-hmm. I think we'll be able to close that out. Most recently, we had the fire over on Carroll Street that we're looking into. So... But I'm happy. I think it's a safe town. It's safer than it was, and we want to keep progressing.
Yes, I get very offended when I met somebody from Chatham, I think, who started saying, oh, you live in that city. It's so dangerous. I had to kind of laugh. Things happen here, but, I walk the streets at 3 in the morning.
Right.
And it doesn't – it's not frightening.
No.
But getting back to the areas of crime, that is to say, parts of the city that are more crime prone than others. Do you think that crime is kind of evenly distributed through the city, or
it's the level of crime? Okay, what is it? And it's not evenly distributed in any city.
Right,
it's localized. They're going to be around stores. There's petty crimes of. Larcenies and of course burglaries are going to be more prevalent in the fifth ward than, let's say, the second ward, or where there's more stores, the third mm-hmm. ward. There's different types of crime, mm-hmm. so not evenly distributed. If I were to say, hey, the more violent crimes are in the first or second ward, then this afternoon we'll have one in the fourth ward.
Right.
It's a small city, and I don't look at it in terms of wards, so
I wish everybody in the city thought that way.
Right.
Because, yes, you know that...
Yeah, I understand.
Divisive it's hard to get a consensus in this city.
I think it's a small city, and I think I don't want to say the words are divisive. It's a right. part of government. It's part of how the people are represented. I understand all that. But I don't look at it in terms of those
sure.
wards.
All wards want freedom from crime and,
right.
and want to feel safe.
Right. They're all citizens of right. the city, and they all deserve that.
I guess what I was building up to, and I'm not sure how to phrase this, but, you know, there's always claims that, oh, you hear about Fifth Street and the drug situation on Fifth Street. It seems to me sometimes that people assume wherever black people are gathering on a stoop, that must be a place of crime.
Yeah, there's some of that. There's some of that. But again, remember.
Falsely.
Of course. Of
yeah.
course. You know, I mean, people are individuals and they bring their conceptions and prejudices and whatever with them. And they understand that. Again, I hearken back to what I told you before, is that the officers are aware. They're aware of, keenly aware of who the good people are, who mm-hmm. the bad people are. And trust me, they're in every ward. And so, yeah, you have those misconceptions.
Well, I'm always amused by the hypocrisy of people who live in the fancier wards, so to speak, who, you know, indulge in casual drug use and then are up in arms about drug use in the, you know, the underprivileged areas. It's like,
well, I mean, that's the story of just human beings.
Life.
That way everywhere.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you have to apply the police force has to have a philosophy of going aggressively after drugs everywhere. But you
does that include marijuana?
Well, I'm less of a, of course it does, because that's what the law says. But I am more, I'm less sympathetic towards a drug dealer than I am a drug user.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, these people are made slaves by the drugs. And to me, the person peddling the drugs is the person that I really want to get.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the absence of those people, other opportunities can come up for these people to not be part of the drug culture and drug trade. And that's really how you repair a city. So, yeah, there's drug use everywhere. But we see a lot of heroin now where we didn't see it before.
Mm.
You have crack, which was one of the worst things ever come along. And there is marijuana, sure, but I would say heroin and crack are more addictive and more harmful immediately to the young people.
Mm-hmm. No crystal meth in town?
Oh, sure. I mean, but you see outlying areas in the county now where we're having drugs where we didn't see them before in these little, you know, quiet farming communities and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now you see by recent arrests.
That's what it's like in the Midwest.
Yeah.
I mean, it traditionally comes from the county, you know, the rural areas rather than the city.
Right.
Now, how do you work with the troopers and the county sheriff's office in terms of these kinds
of
things? Because obviously we don't live in a bubble where, you know, you have to.
Hey, the taxpayers are paying for these services. So I'm not going to put up a wall around the city of Hudson.
Right.
If I can work with the sheriff's department, which is a great department, if I can work with the local troopers, which I have personal knowledge with, I'm going to invite them in to help me out. I'm not too proud to ask for help. So if I need help regarding a large event or, you know, some kind of support or anything like that, first one I'll call is the sheriff or the local captain here. The state police and I will ask for the help. So I'd like to think that I get along well. We have meetings together at the district attorney's office. We go over cases. We have open lines of communication. But this is what the taxpayer deserves.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they care when a tragedy happens. Who really?
Right, who's there?
Yeah.
Both groups can come into the city at any time, right?
Yes.
Sheriff's office and the troopers.
Yes.
You, however, can't go out into the county.
Correct.
Okay. So the key in terms of the drug dealing and everything is to keep those lines of communication open. I mean, do you share information about
absolutely.
This thing?
Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely. You know, the things that the troopers and the deputies can do is they can interdict the drugs on the way in or out of the city. Like I said, a majority of crime in the county has some roots in the city of Hudson. So, you know, we're going to work together because the person doesn't commit the crime and just stay in Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
We share the information. We work, and I think we work well together, and we will in the future.
I've noticed that sometimes when you're walking the city, you don't wear your blue uniform. Is that a conscious decision? How do you feel? I mean, do you feel like the blue uniform is a an important for people, to, for the young people in particular, to see you like that, or to see you also as just a regular guy?
It's a more utilitarian uniform. It's the universal police uniform. Mm. People recognize it as the police, and that's why I wear it. And I want to be visible. You know, like the bike patrol, I just changed their uniforms to be more, I'm trying to change the uniforms to be more visible. I think when people feel safe, they are safe. In other words, it's about public perception.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to know that we're out there. We're not just sitting in the car. And when they see a shop owner sees the chief or sees a police officer walk by a couple times a day, they say, hey, you know, they're out there. Mm-hmm. And I can talk to them, and they're a presence. And if people feel safer, they are safer.
So in terms of police behavior in general, do you emphasize to your men and women that their behavior is crucial example in terms of things like being on the phone when they're driving? I mean, should they be exempt from that kind of behavior? I mean, they can communicate without phones, correct?
They can communicate via radio, yep.
So if one, say, perhaps saw a police officer, I'm not making any accusations here, on the phone, that's not a good thing, right? Because then it's
right.
sort of licenses.
Listen, so much is public perception.
Right.
So just like a big dirty uniform with coffee stains and crumbs on it and a disheveled hair and hat is just as bad criticism as on a cell phone and doing the things that they can't do. You're not above the law,
right.
A public servant. Now, there's times, there's always a, that's been something I've heard over the years. There's times when they're on the phone, they might actually be in contact with the station and part of their work. But obviously, I'm not going to say that's 100%
right.
of the time. So these are the kind of things you try to emphasize. What is your public perception? How do citizens, you're a public servant, how do they perceive you? Do they perceive that you're working for them or that you're above them? And this is something you try to reemphasize.
True.
Yeah.
You know, I get that vibe from some officers sometimes, not just here, but elsewhere. You
everywhere.
Know, the
everywhere.
Ones who just...
And a lot of it is deserved. A lot of it isn't deserved. Okay, but if you stay consistent, if our uniforms are sharp, if we're respectful, if we're good mannered, and our behavior is within what's acceptable, and we set that example over weeks and months, people will start to recognize this and be proud of their local police department. They're professional in their behavior. And this is what we're trying to do here.
Is there random drug testing of the police?
No.
No, they're not.
No.
So it's not like the city.
Right.
Do you think that's something that should exist or not exist?
I'm not really.
Do you have strong feelings about it one way or the other?
I would have no problem with the officers being drug tested.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be a good thing, and we could show that, hey, you know, we're fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think. I'm not really sure on this, Tom. I believe that's something that would have to be negotiated through the
with
union.
The union, yeah.
Yeah. But I would have nothing against that.
Yeah. I'm not making any charges. But
oh, no, no. The troopers, for example, they instituted that in the state police, and the state police are randomly drug tests. So it's something that's fairly new. It's finding its way to the police department, different police departments and agencies,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure it'll eventually come to Hudson.
Have you, you know, in communities south of here and in the city and closer, there's been a lot of controversy about policemen sort of the favoritism that comes with fixing tickets and that kind of stuff. Has that kind of culture or, let's say, rebellion against that kind of culture sort of happening here? Or is there still, I mean, it is a small town, small city, so you still can kind of like, you know, be understanding in a
right.
way that a big city can't.
One of the things I notice is contrast with, let's say, the troopers or the sheriff's departments that have a highway patrol component.
Mm-hmm.
We're not really a vehicle and traffic priority. I don't want to even put it that way. But
right.
Tickets are not. Ticket writing and traffic enforcement isn't a very important thing we do, no doubt about it. But in a small city, it doesn't become a large component of what we do. Our guys are answering criminal calls and domestics and things like this. Doesn't offer a lot of time for ticket writing. So we don't have that kind of an issue. I have not heard of that kind of issue in the city of Hudson for years. There's always, and then on the other side of it, it's a small city.
Right.
So you're always going to have the issues of politics and nepotism and favoritism and stuff like that. And it's hard once when accusations like that are made, how do you demonstrate that you're not part of that kind
right.
of thing, you know?
I know. The thing I used, you know, I used to believe in that notion that police should live in the communities they police. And then I started thinking, well, maybe not. Maybe there's an advantage for them not to live in that community because they don't end up having the ties. I mean, it seems to me there's arguments on either side. How do you fall down on that?
Well, the regulations were, and I had a meeting with the First Ward down at Basilica. This point came up, and I agree. You know, I understand the sentiments. Hey, shouldn't you live in the city that you serve? And then, mm-hmm. you know, if the law, and I said if that law were changed, then I would pack my bags and go. I would understand.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple issues here. The regulations now require that I live within 15 miles of the city lines, so that applies to all the officers.
Oh, it does.
So
okay.
that does you get you a little bit more of community mm-hmm. awareness mm-hmm. than, let's say, if you lived in Newburgh and work in New York City like
right.
a lot of the New
oh,
York
yeah.
City cops.
Yeah.
So you do have some community awareness.
And there was an effort at one point in the city cops to get more police from the city, and then it just kind of petered
right.
out. Because
well, what happens is, you know, then your pool of available... You know, I mean, let's face it, the
right,
city is 6,500
right.
people. So your pool of available officers and employees, you know, it gets smaller. So you don't want to restrict yourself so much. But I do understand that sentiment. Like, hey, you're from out of town, and what would you know? And I do appreciate those concerns. But all these guys, they give their sweat and their blood here
mm-hmm.
in the city of Hudson. They're attached. Believe me, they're attached to the city of Hudson.
How many females on the force?
We have two. Females, yeah.
And how many people of color?
I would say three.
Three.
Yeah.
Is that a priority in recruiting at all?
Well, recruiting, it's not a big department like the
mm-hmm.
state police.
Right.
We have a civil service test, and we're, you know, bound by that to pull from the people that finished highest on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a concern. You want the department to be reflective of the community.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that I can't do. I can't, you know, take people off the civil service
right.
list and put people in because...
Sure.
So I don't really have that latitude. But again, going back to setting an example, we want to set an example so people of color, minority community, would want to be part of the police
right.
department. Not consider them outsiders.
Maybe even someone from the Bengali community.
Yeah, right, right. You never
right?
know. Right,
yeah.
sure.
There's a lot of young men in that community
yes.
who should think about it, you
yeah.
know. They could be doing their community a great service by representing them in the police force.
Absolutely.
We're here at WGXC 90.7 or WGXC.org talking with Police Chief Edward Moore, 4 months into the job. And I've seen very little criticism out there. If you have some, maybe you want to call in. But it seems that there's a new era, so to speak, in the policing in town, in the city. I always call it town because obviously it feels like a town, and even though it's a city. And as you say, of slightly under 7,000, 600, 6.5 to 7,000 people. And it seems to me that the police chief, like the mayor, could almost actually meet everyone in this over a period of time, meet everybody who lives within the city limits.
Right. What I've been doing on my foot patrol is stopping in just randomly at stores and talking to store owners. And I've been down where people live. And it's not as much as I want to because I am bound by a lot of administrative work
mm-hmm.
in my office. One of my and it's the worst part of the job, really. But my favorite part of the job is getting out. And you get a lot of good information, not about crimes and things, but just general information
mm-hmm.
from people just in casual conversation.
Sure.
You get a good feel. I mean, you really can't get a feel for this city unless you're out walking around. It's really
right.
an interesting, great place.
I've gotten it through the bars of Hudson.
right. Sure.
I mean, it's amazing how
yeah.
friendly, you know, everywhere from, you know, Iron Horse and Molino's to the fancier PM bar and those kind of places. People like to talk. People like to socialize in this
sure.
town. Drinking is a big part of the
well,
town.
It's an old, old city. I think it's the third oldest city in the state.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of history, a lot of great history. And I find that appealing.
Well, you're saying about walking on Warren Street. I know that a common complaint from people north on the north side is that Warren Street gets too much attention. Mm. Now, I think one obvious answer is that it is kind of the economic engine of the city. But at the same time, you know, I'm not even sure I agree with it, but do you think that's right? Or do you think that's really true, first of all? And if it is true, it seems to me there is a case to be made that Warren Street needs more attention.
Well, it's because the police station's on Warren Street, of course, you're going to see the cars there, and that's where the guys start their bicycle mm-hmm. patrol. So there's that. But I do believe that we have to concentrate on other things than Warren Street. Warren Street is not the high crime area. You know, it's a maintenance thing there. We want to make sure the shop owners see us and everything and they're safe. But we really need to get into the other streets and walk around there.
I'd rather see more DPW people walking Warren Street.
Right.
Yeah, as you know, over the July 4th weekend, that was really a disaster.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. But let me tell you, I've worked in a lot of towns in the Hudson Valley. And I want to tell you, the DP, just to give them a little credit, they're good. They're hardworking guys. I really noticed between the parks, and they're constantly working. I saw Rob Perry just this morning, and I said that exact same thing. I said, we got a pretty good DPW group here. These guys work hard, and they're always working, it seems to me. And they got a lot of preventative projects and stuff going. And that's mm-hmm. it adds to the community, you know, when the park is clean and these things are painted and looks good. I just think that whole thing with the garbage was probably a glitch because mm-hmm. what I see is a lot of hard work mm-hmm. by these guys.
Now, is the police department in charge of enforcing dog laws and litter laws and all that kind of thing?
Yeah, now here's the thing. Those little maintenance things are something that I want to concentrate on. Now, why they seem picayune,
you know, it's broken windows.
It's exactly the philosophy. And for example, the guy doing the public urination at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know what? He might be wanted by Buffalo. The guy doing the littering or whatever, the noise complaint, that might be the gateway to identifying the person as being more so a bigger problem. So it's not a matter of going around and hassling people for littering, but you know, the clean streets and being able to get to sleep after 2 o'clock in the morning mm-hmm. without a loud, this is what adds to the community and the quality of life. But it's also a way for us to identify troublemakers,
mm-hmm. especially with the dogs.
Well, dogs, dogs, I know troublemakers there. we enforce all the codes, mm-hmm. the different codes. Some of them are a little harder to enforce than others. And noise complaints.
You have to see it happening.
Yeah,
right?
The noise complaint involves decibels and this kind of stuff. That's one of our biggest things is in the summertime is after hours, loud establishments or parties going on. And we try to give people a warning and get the thing knocked down so the quality of life is enjoyed by everybody.
So we should tell our listeners, and I think you'll agree with this, that if they see you on the street, come up and talk to you. You're a friendly guy.
Yeah, I mean, I really feel privileged to be here. You know, I didn't really know I was going to end up here. I wasn't thinking about retirement.
You were a trooper before
I was
this,
a trooper
right?
for 32 years.
A lieutenant, I believe?
First sergeant of
first
the
sergeant.
Troop. And I was approached back in February, I guess, when Ellis was leaving. He decided mm-hmm. he was going to leave, and they said, well, we need a new chief. So I was approached by several people I've never met before, which I found interesting. So I started thinking about it, and I said, well, everyone can see that Hudson is an improving situation, and why not be part of it?
Right. What's your relationship with the police commissioner?
Well, Gary Graziano had not met any time in my life prior mm-hmm. to him calling me and having me.
Actually, I don't mean on a personal thing. I mean like.
Well, I hadn't met him. Yeah. So what this is, and it's kind of relates to that. So he sat me down and interviewed me regarding the chief's position. Mm-hmm. And then I realized right away that a lot of the philosophy that he had as to the treatment of the public and also the officers and the things he would like to do because he loves City of Hudson and the things we want to do to improve, we're on the same page. So what happens is, I said, you know, this is a good situation because we feel the same way. It started to get me thinking about retiring and then coming over here. And I'm so glad I did because it's been exactly that. The commissioner and I meet frequently. We go out together to the different wards. We've addressed public meetings together. Any issue, he's available. I mean, he immediately will call me or email me or text me.
So is his role to be a liaison between the mayor and you, or
he's more or less he's my, you know, in a way he can oversee the, he oversees the police department. He's my boss.
Oh, he is. And absolutely. So he can set policy.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And what's nice about that is because we agree on, you know, the philosophy of a lot of these things about improving and being a public servant. And I mean, he's doing it and he's putting in hours and hours and hours, right, for no pay.
Right.
So that tells you that his motivation to really make this a good situation are genuine, and I like that.
Is he a former officer himself?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Which is probably a good thing in some ways, right?
Yeah, I mean we're public servants, so yeah. What you really need to be tuned in on is what is the need,
mm-hmm.
and then it's up to me to figure out how to address that need because that's where my police experience comes in.
Now you had that one meeting in the first ward. Do you plan on similar?
Yeah, I've had several. I had below third. I got together down there, and we'll have another one. We'll have one in the second ward. I. You know, as these things come up, I make myself available and enjoy doing it and try to be in touch with everybody's concerns. You know, right now, administratively, it's a tough time. We're preparing our budget for next year.
Mm-hmm.
I have issues with, like you said, the new cars and the new hires. So I'm tied up with a lot of administrative stuff now. But when I can, every available minute, I try to get out and see people.
So the hires would be already in the budget, right? I mean, they would they'd be accounted. That's not something
right,
you have
because
to,
we've lost two, their salaries have already been accounted for.
Right.
So.
So with the new budget, you wouldn't have to like ask for more for those two hires. Yeah. Are there any other major issues with the upcoming budget other than the two cars?
Well, you know, listen, I think what I hear from the people is that they are concerned about taxes and spending, and they feel they're taxed too much, and are you being conservative? And I want to tell you, we are being very conservative with how we spend money. It doesn't make me happy to go to the city council and ask for two new cars because we need them. I understand, and we don't want to be spendthrifts and have anything extraneous. On the other hand, there's things that we need to run the department, and try to hit that in the right spot. We'll try to be responsible to the taxpayers, and at the same time, be well equipped.
Well, you know, it's the phenomenon I think as the great American hypocrisy that we want tons of service, but really don't want to pay for it.
Yeah, and things are so costly. But yeah. I tell you, the thing that I always hear day to day is how much taxes people are paying. There goes one of our trains now.
Our train.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's amazing how much, it's obviously not a police matter, but, you know, the whole issue of assessments and how people are taxed in this town.
Well, one of the things that works in conjunction with this is at one of the meetings, someone told me, you know, why are you buying a car? A bicycle's a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's true. If I can start to increase the bike patrol, the foot patol, that will take away from the wear and tear on our vehicles, and it all works together to saving money and provide services.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things that we're doing to try to be fiscally responsible.
But that's, you know, in the whole conversation about cars, it never occurred to me, of course, that it has all that equipment that is really essential to good policing.
Cars are essential. I don't want to be down on. I love cars, whatever. But you know, we have to arrest someone. We have to put them in a secured car. There's the radio communication. There's the quick response. There's the equipment that's in the car.
Right.
I mean, obviously, cars. I don't want to be down on cars. I love cars, but they are expensive. The maintenance, the gasoline budget is up so much from the last couple of years. People don't realize, you know, just the cost of gasoline can really affect the budget of the police department. So if we can do things to kind of supplement that by foot and bike patrol and doubling up, you know, I doubled up the men and women after hours. So instead of being single police cars, they're doubled up now, which cuts down on the wear and tear and gasoline usage.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the response time is pretty fast because of such a small city. So
I've actually seen two officers late at night patrolling on foot.
Right, right. That's something we're even going to do bad weather, the whole thing, because that, you know, that's what we need to do. And a lot of the old-timers, a lot of retired police officers in town, they've encouraged me to do that, too, because that's what they used to do.
That's great. We've been talking to Chief Edward Moore here on At Issue, a show normally hosted by political aspirant Victor Mendolia, and I've been substituting. I'm Tom DiPietro, and I want to thank the chief for coming in. You've answered all the questions, and I invited people on there. No one even called, so I guess there's no complaint.
So far, so good, but I'm very privileged, very happy to be here, and I thank you. Thank the citizens here for having me.
Great. Thank you, Chief.
Okay.
You've been listening to WGXC 90.7 on your radio. Also, WGXC.org. And let's see. Let's get some music going here to take us out. If I can set this up. What I need is... Here we go. What's this? WGXC. Stay tuned for Tyson Hauf. I forget what he calls his show, but it's an awesome show. Oh, here we go. The promo. And it's from the 10 to 11. I'm sorry, from 11 to 12. Here we go.
Attention men and women 50 and older. Are you uninsured? The Columbia Green Cancer Services Program offers free cancer screening tests. You could be eligible for free clinical breast exams, mammograms, pap smears, and colon tests. There are many local doctors to choose from. To find out more, please call the Cancer Services Program at 518-822-8741. Early detection is the best prevention. The Columbia Green Cancer Services Program is a program of the Healthcare Consortium and is funded by the New York State Department of Health Cancer Services Program.
Jazz on WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA. The Jazz Disturbance on Thursday evenings from 7 to 9:30 brings you jazz and improvisational music. From Bix to Monk, from traditional to funk, from scat to swing, and everything in between. Join me, Cheryl Kay, for the Jazz Disturbance, Thursday evenings from 7 to 9:30 on WGXC. 90.7 FM, ACRA, hands on radio, and on the World Wide Web at WGXC.org.
They're blaming questions, you know? You're a member of the community, so you're not like listening to them was like listening to my bosses, though. I work at the railroad.
Hi, this is Tess from Common Hands Farm. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA, Hudson, where community supported radio meets community supported agriculture.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Rip Van Winkle Tobacco-Free Action, helping to create tobacco-free places for people to live, learn, work, and play. TobaccoFreeNYS.org.
National Night Out is a free, family-friendly community event taking place at Dutchman's Landing, Catskill, on Tuesday, August 6th from 5 to 9 p.m. Activities include music, food, contests, dancing, and prizes. It's completely free and open to the public. National Night Out is presented by the REACH Center of Mental Health Association of Columbia and Greene Counties, Incorporated. For more information, call the REACH Center at 828-5556.